We begin today with the surgical mesh story. A Health Ministry report has highlighted the severity of harm that has been caused, and specialist surgical mesh clinics for men and women who've experienced complications are to be set up. From January, the Ministry will also be establishing a credentialing committee to investigate how best to ensure more thorough checks on surgeons. And ACC says it will review the claims it has declined for people who have suffered pain and health problems after having surgical mesh implants. Our guests this morning are the Health Ministry's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Andrew Simpson, Chief Nursing Officer, Margaret Broadcorn, and Mesh Down Under's founder, Patricia O'Sullivan, who has been one of the, who has been one of those campaigning for years to get action on this matter. Russia's four-year ban from the Olympics, world championships in a range of sports, the FIFA World Cup, and a ban from hosting or bidding major events. The sanctions have been imposed by the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, and Russia plans to file lawsuits with the Court of Arbitration for Sport to challenge them. But according to some high-profile officials, the action doesn't go far enough. Our guests are the British sports writer Ian Herbert, who has been covering this story for years. Asia correspondent Ed White before 10 this morning. Then after 10, lawyer Rob Billett. He will be talking about his near 20-year battle with chemical giant DuPont over poisoned water. He was working as a corporate lawyer in 1998 when he was contacted by a West Virginia farmer convinced that a creek on his farm was being poisoned by an old landfill. It led to a major legal battle, in fact many, with the chemical giant DuPont. It began with one settlement, and then a settlement with the EPA, and then a class action. And the ramifications of what was learned during this case have global impact. There is a new film called Dark Waters, which stars Mark Ruffalo and Anne Hathaway. But the real man at the centre of this story, Rob Billett, is with us after 10. Our book for review, Life, Selected Writings by Tim Flannery. Tilly Lloyd's into review. It will have the final of Shoot Through by Janice Marriott at 10:45. After 11, we're anticipating the first exit polls in the British election, where voting has been happening overnight. Our correspondent, Matt Dathan, is on standby with those results from the first exit polls to see if they can give us any kind of a clear indication of where this election result is heading. Music reviewer Jeremy Taylor is in, sports commentator Brendan Telfer on the new All Blacks coach Ian Foster, so much debate about whether he's the right person for the job, and comedians To Radar and Pinky Agnew are here before midday. 7 minutes past nine it is, and you are listening to Nine to Noon. Specialist surgical mesh clinics for men and women who've experienced complications are to be set up by the Ministry of Health on the back of a report highlighting the severity of harm its use has caused in some cases. From January, the Ministry will also be establishing a credentialing committee to investigate how best to ensure more thorough checks on surgeons. Meanwhile, ACC says it will review the claims it has declined for people who have suffered pain and health problems after having surgical mesh implants. More than $27 million in claims has been paid out by ACC to 1,467 victims. The announcements follow the release of a restorative justice report into the harm suffered by patients. Between August and October of this year, over 600 mesh-injured people shared their stories through 32 forums or to an online database. Additional stories were heard from family and whānau of people affected by mesh and health professionals. Our guests are the Ministry's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Andrew Simpson. Good morning.
Morena.
Chief Nursing Officer Margaret Broadcorn, who attended the forums with those affected. Hello, Margaret.
Morena.
And good morning also to Patricia Sullivan from the advocacy group Mesh Down Under. Patricia, good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Andrew, can you explain, as the Chief Medical Officer, what you've received here, what you've heard, and the decisions that are resulting?
Certainly. First of all, I'd really like to thank the Mesh Down Under and the wider mesh community for so generously sharing their stories with us, which has helped culminate in this report. This has stemmed from we heard that people felt their stories hadn't been heard and that we felt it was important for the mesh community to have their voice such that we could hear what the impacts had been on their lives and the harms that had been suffered. We initially did a survey back late last year, which informed us there was a strong interest in this, and we subsequently then worked with Victoria University Restorative Justice team to work towards this project that has now happened. We had a co-design team across Mesh Down Under, ourselves and Victoria University, which actually designed this process. So it was a very much a co-design process between Mesh Down Under and ourselves. This culminated in the 30 forums where we heard stories, and also there was an online database where people could further submit their stories as well. Listening to the stories, the word confronting has been used a lot, and it was very, very confronting. They were raw stories. There was real harm. It was, to hear that personally was very saddening and challenging, and it was distressing to hear how we'd failed these patients. Part of this process going forward was that we invited other agencies who have been involved in the health sector and care of people from the mesh community. And these included ACC and Medical Council, the colleges, and they all willingly participated and came and participated in the story and in the forums and heard the harms themselves. And then we came together for a final meeting where we started picking up all the themes that had been heard and designing actions to actually, how do we address these harms? What are the actions that we could be taking? Part of this was actually the report, and what the report is trying to do is reflect what we've heard. And there's some pretty raw commentary and quotes in there, and the purpose of that was to ensure that we try to reflect the emotion that was in the forums so that people could feel that their story was truly being told. So this is a truly important document reflecting the patient voice.
One thinks of the story and ultimately the Royal Commission into cervical cancer and treatment. Since then, has there been anything undertaken like this?
Oh, you mean like this project?
Yes.
Not that I'm aware of. This is the first time that I'm aware of a restorative process like this in health has been undertaken.
We'll come back in a moment to what's being committed to. Chief Nursing Officer Margaret Broodcon, could I ask you please about your experience and role of the forums and the listening to people who had for many years been asked to be listened to and outlined experiences that were far from that. Could you please tell me what you've experienced and learned?
Catherine, I suppose, where do I start? I think Andy has indicated that through this over 30 forums and actually some home visits as well as the opportunity for those to submit online, my role purely as a ministry official in these forums was to listen. These were listening circles, listening forums for us to actually hear the voices of those that have been harmed by surgical mesh. And as has been described by many, the harrowing experiences or just the challenge of actually listening to these experiences. Sitting next to men and women and their partners, their loved ones, and sharing the loss and the impact on their lives has been profound, actually. You know, hearing the recount from these individuals and families and the impact on and the psychosocial harms that that were shared, including addiction and to pain medication, the post-traumatic stress that had occurred, that sexual dysfunction, sleeping disorders, breakdown in relationships, the impact on their families in terms of financial costs and their losses, including their health, their well-being, employment. The experience has absolutely been profound. I'm so very pleased, though, that the report was able to capture that. It has been described. It has been, the harrowing experience and the report can be quite confronting, but actually it does reflect the rawness of what was shared. And I'm grateful to the Victoria team and to Joe particularly for actually being able to demonstrate this in the report, because that's the important importance, the importance of actually hearing from those that have been harmed to actually tell these stories.
Andrew Simpson, what is being committed to as a result of this? What went wrong in the use, whether it should have been used at all, but certainly then in how the use of these medical devices was undertaken in the New Zealand health system? And then why it took so long and so much and so many injured people to get here. What went wrong and what are the commitments to change?
This is not just a New Zealand issue, this is a global issue. This has happened around the world, which doesn't excuse it. What's gone wrong is people have gone into operations with best intent, whether it be the patients, whether it be the surgeons, and gone in with an intent to heal or lessen a symptom. However, things haven't gone right. And has that been due to many different... Has it been related to the mesh product? Has it been related to the skill and training of the surgeon? Has it been related to the facility where they're in? Has it been related to, has this been the right step in the right part of the pathway for that patient? Has the patient had the right information, the best information that they can have to make the decision for themselves? Have they been aware of what other treatment options they could have? What are the risks or benefits of proceeding with a mesh intervention? And what would be the impact if a mesh intervention didn't have the benefit that you were wanting? If something went wrong, or if you had an adverse event, what would truly be the impact and understanding that impact? A lot of these degrees of information weren't known when these things were going forward. However, we need to be learning from what we've got now, and so we've got a real commitment that we will be looking at, well, sorry, not looking at, we will be implementing mesh specialist services to remove, to assess people having problems with mesh and to mesh explantation, removing the mesh.
Who, when I talked to her some time ago, had already done 50 and seems to do most of them. And I'm talking removal here. I'm talking whatever and whatever remediation is possible after the harm is done. And this is particularly for gynecological and urinary procedures and prolapse procedures. What are you saying? Are you going to develop a specialist team? Is there going to be far more proactivity in listening to someone who says, I've had these symptoms for this number of years? Like, what's going to change from what's available now?
Very much we're looking at a multidisciplinary specialist service that is ensuring, have you got the right wraparound services? So it's not just, it is understanding what the patient is telling you. Have they got problems with pain? Have we got appropriate pain assessment? Have we got appropriate physical assessments? Have we got the appropriate skill mix to be actually dealing with these people and providing them support, whether it be psychosocial support, physio support, surgical support? How do we bring that together and provide that in the one place to ensure that the patient is achieving the best possible outcome for themselves? So there will be specialist multidisciplinary services where multiple clinicians are involved to provide the best advice and pathway forward for these patients.
What is happening with the training and oversight of surgeons? Again, this very much appears to be part of the story, whose skill and experience and performance in using these medical interventions may have been part of the story here. What is happening?
As part of that, we actually went out last year and actually asked all the DHBs and also the private providers to ensure that people who are using mesh products, specifically for stress urinary incontinence, were credentialed against the Australian guidance at that time, which was actually, what are the skills you need? Are you doing achieving the right outcomes? Are you monitoring how you're going? And so the providers were actually credentialing their surgeons against those criteria.
Were they?
We put the information out, and we've heard back from the DHBs that there's approximately at this point 20 odd surgeons who are credentialed in these procedures.
Were surgeons who weren't credentialed doing procedures?
I don't know. I don't have the information. If there was a greater number, we do know that there were 20 DHBs who had been involved in management of stress urinary incontinence. We know that as a response to the letter we put out, that we're now down to 10 DHBs that are providing surgical services.
What is the position of the relevant specialist colleges now on this whole history?
The specialist colleges have participated in this process. They have embraced this process. They actually came to some of the forums. They actually heard the stories. They participated in the workshop we had in November, and they've all made a commitment on the back of this report to be actively involved in supporting the credentialing process going forward.
Margaret, what did you hear from people, whether it was hernia operations or whether it was the urinary gynecological operations? They have slightly different histories, including length of histories in the use of such products, and slightly different significantly different adverse event outcomes, but equally when it happens it is severe. What did people tell you went wrong for them? Where did you see a pattern of actions or inactions that got to this situation?
Thanks, Catherine. As I shared earlier, I think what has been shared by those the patients and families was that absolute impact on their lives and their and the concerns that they raised. They raised concerns around informed consent and acknowledged that it was important that providing patients with full information and prudent patient consent is a process that we need to look into.
Sorry to interrupt you, did many say we weren't told about alternatives, we weren't told about the risks. In fact, sometimes even the terminology used was not recognisable as surgical mesh. Did you hear that story over and over?
Certainly that was recognised, and certainly that was shared within the forums. Within the Restorative Justice Forums, that is exactly what was shared. There were many stories and many people that shared their concerns around that they weren't provided with other options, and that they believe that the informed consent process could well be improved. And as part of that process, and as part of a parallel process during the time that we're running the forums, there was also a co-design process where Mesh Down Under advocates and our clinicians in the ministry team developed a patient information document for women who would be considering surgical mesh to assist in providing further information around options and treatment processes in terms of stress urinary incontinence. So that was a co-design process with the professional colleges and Mesh Down Under to provide some additional information for women who are undertaking these or considering these procedures.
What funding is available, Andrew, for this?
At this point, what we're doing is we're committing to the provision of the multidisciplinary surgical mesh service, and we will find the funding that is required to do that.
Gold Coast Multidisciplinary Mesh Specialist Clinic was allocated $3.14 million per annum for 3 years, then to be reviewed. Is that an indicator of the sorts of costs, or is it going to be much higher than that when it comes to the actual specialist provision services?
That's an indicator of the possible costs. What we're doing is we're actually putting together an advisory group as to how do we set this clinic up, what's the expertise we need, where's the best place to put this, and that will funding will then follow that.
People's dealings with ACC, I'm sure you would have heard a lot about in the listening forums. $27 million has been paid out in claims to 1,467 people. What is happening for others who said, we have made the case, we've been declined? What has ACC committed to?
Look, as you're aware, ACC have meeting with Mesh Down Under to look at what's the scope of the review and how would that progress. They are committed to discussing this further with the Mesh Down Under and the Mesh community.
Could I add to that, Catherine?
You could, Margaret, please.
Margaret, yeah. Look, I just wanted to acknowledge that that ACC, and certainly you asked the question earlier about some of the concerns that were raised in the forums, and yes, there was reference to ACC, but I'm really pleased that ACC and the team have come and committed to some really key actions. Looking back at declined claims that that have occurred over the past years, and working with a patient advocacy group of Mesh Down Under to look back through those declined scheduled claims. They're actually also looking into the upskilling and education, so partnering with us at the Ministry of Health to develop comprehensive education and skills programs to prevent mesh-related injury. They're looking at improving their case management processes. They're looking at, and again, working with us around the mesh sentence and the surgeon's credentialing processes. So I'm really pleased that ACC has come forward with these specific actions that they're committing to.
I need to leave time for Patricia's reactions. I just want to get some specific matters resolved, Andy, first with you. From some of what Mesh Down Under has put forward, native tissue procedures are under high vigilance scrutiny in the UK, not being monitored here. And we are now seeing a rise in people having complications from surgeons attempting native tissue procedures, putting in phasia slings too tight and causing just as much damage. Surgeons have not done training in these procedures for nearly a decade, and there's been a pushing for training in this area for years. Is there a parallel investment in upskilling surgeons for doing the native tissue work instead?
This is part of, when we set up the credentialing committee that's meeting in January, that'll be one of the key questions we ask the committee, is actually what do we do in this space as well? Because when we're looking at credentialing around pelvic floor procedures, native tissue repair is actually part of that.
So the same upskilling and the same specialist oversight and credentialing will be happening for native tissues. Is it possible to temporarily stop the use of the medical devices altogether, as happened in the UK? There was a pause in place while clinics were set up. Is that part of the plan?
Not at this point. Very much it's around safety process. It's making sure we've got the right surgeons in the right place, they've got the right skills to be doing these procedures. It's about ensuring that the right information is there and making sure it's an appropriate informed choice.
Mesh Down Under says they're hearing from men who are upset because they feel like they've got a raw deal. They've suffered just as much with limited access to competent surgeons who can help them. There's no list of surgeons who are able to do non-mesh repairs, nor a list of surgeons who are competent in removing hernia mesh. Also, a majority of hernia claims are declined. What's happening for them? Because they have outlined their agonies in some cases too.
Yeah, when we're looking at the multidisciplinary mesh services, we will be looking at those patients as well. You know, the main focus will be our urogynecological procedures, but we will also be writing the script to include those.
Will the credentialing process include hernia?
We will seek the advice of the college on that.
You'll seek the advice of the college on that. What do you expect the college's position to be?
They will be. I suspect that they'll be in favour of that.
Has the provider register been extended to include hernia?
Not as pointed as very much on the urogynecological procedures.
All right. Thank you very much. Please stay with us. I appreciate your time with us today. Listening is Patricia O'Sullivan of the advocacy group Mesh Down Under. Thank you for your patience, Patricia, although it's been many years of patience for you and others, and not just patience, a heck of a lot of hard work and advocacy. Could I get your response to the report and to the commitments that have been made, please?
Okay, thank you, Catherine. Well, I guess we feel validated as far as the report is concerned, and I guess we feel a burden lifting off our shoulders. That's Charlotte, Carmel and myself, because we've been calling out for years, since 2012, to sort of expose what's been going on in this area of health, which is, so for me, this is bittersweet. The sweet part is that our voices have been heard and validated. The bitter part is that there is no funding yet. And the other, and the thing is, I'm very grateful to that the Ministry of Health did initiate this this report together with Vic for Restorative Justice. But we've been sitting at a mesh round table for 2 years. We have, as Margaret said, we've done an informed consent booklet for those having contemplating surgery for stress urinary incontinence. That is not mandatory. And so we know there are surgeons still doing this, doing these stress urinary incontinence procedures and not necessarily giving that booklet to their patients. So we would like that mandatory. The Ministry of Health have said they are stressing that it must happen, but it is not necessarily happening. The other thing is the provider registers that the DHBs are giving information back to the Ministry of Health. That only began in September. Only 40% of surgeries are happening in the DHBs, and you've just heard Andy say that 10 DHBs are no longer doing those surgeries. So we are missing the bulk of the data where the surgeries are happening in the private space. So, that needs to be seriously looked at. We want timeframes. We've been sitting at a round table for 2 years. We've been involved with credentialing for 18 months, and now we're going to start again in January. So we really need the Ministry of Health and the colleges. They've now committed. Now we want them to commit to timeframes. We want a stake in the sand. We want to know that mesh clinic, that first one's going to be set up by, for example, April or May. They know what has to happen. We've been talking about it for years. And our people, all our mesh injured, they feel they've told their stories hundreds of times to ACC case managers, to their GPs, to their surgeons. They now want to see tangible, concrete outcomes, and this is about timeframes. And that's going to take money, and we need to have a commitment that there is funding. And once we hear all of that, then our people want to have an apology. We really want to hear, after these timeframes, the stake in the sand, we want to hear an apology from our compassionate and empathetic Prime Minister.
Can I ask you in response to that, Andrew, are there contingency funds? Is there any financial barrier to having those mesh clinics up and running within the sort of time frame that Patricia's... What's stopping you from being able to put a date on it?
At this point, it's actually understanding the expertises and where are those expertises and are they in the right place and have we got the right wraparound services. So can we have a service up and running? We are committed to get that up and running. We would expect that to be in the 2020 year. I just do not want to tell you exactly when in the 2020 year, but we are very firmly committed to progressing that.
Is there such a lack of genuine expertise that you're not confident you could have it up and running in the first 3 or 4 months of next year?
There isn't a lack, but it's again, given all the issues we have heard about, have the people got the right skills? Have they been credentialed to provide this? Have we got the right wraparound services? It's again making sure that we have everything in the right place.
To the point of many of the surgeries happening in the private sector, is there a way to reach into that with the register? Many of these surgeons will work in both, all of them will work in both public and private. Is there a way to ensure that the data is captured from the private surgeries?
We're engaging with the private hospitals and they are actually engaging with us. They want to know what's going on in this space. They're happy to participate and they actually even came to our workshop as part of the reports come up from Restorative Justice. There is engagement there.
Patricia, I understand, are you meeting with ACC today? Because this is the other part of the story and so many have had such a long-running battle with ACC. What's the subject you're discussing with them?
Well, I guess we do feel, Mesh Down Under feel that ACC are definitely looking at this very seriously. And today, I guess we're going to go through their press release. They're talking about declined claims. So I think today's two-hour meeting with them is going to be about hastening how we can look at the, you know, what we can do, what we can change about having those claims declined. And I think that your interview with Sally yesterday, Catherine, what a segue into this, because it is absolutely the same story. We're having people, for example, who have had a, you know, they've had to have a nerve modulator implanted, and yet, and they get funded for that, but they don't get funded for the second part of the surgery that they need. These sorts of ridiculous situations which are putting far much more stress on these already deeply, deeply traumatised people. Now, ACC have also talked about perhaps whilst claims are being considered, could some counselling services be put in place? Let me tell you, that would be a brilliant thing to do, because once you start to lose everything, and Margaret has highlighted the losses that ripple right through your whole being, you know, your whole whānau, your everything. If you could have some counselling, some psychological support in place whilst you're trying to battle the ACC system of legislation that doesn't acknowledge pain, and we know that chronic pain is the major, major symptom here, that would be extremely helpful. So we are once again going out to bat for all our, you know, to be the voice for the injured. And the reason we're the voice is that we're probably the best ones as far as physically able, but this honestly is taking its toll on us. This has been, you know, 7 years. I mean, it is absolutely exhausting. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Catherine, this is about the five P's. If you're going to consider doing the surgery, they need to look at the product, the patient, the practitioner. If there's a problem, they've got to be prompt about sorting it out. And Andy's just said at the end of 2020, that's ridiculous. We can't wait for the end of 2020 for mesh clinics, Andy. You know the story.
Yeah, Patricia, I said it will be provided in 2020. I haven't given a timeline within that.
Thank you, all of you. We will certainly be keeping in touch on progress, and particularly with respect to those with hernia-related problems who do feel they are left behind in this. But thank you, all of you, for coming in and updating us today on the delivery of this report and the next steps. Ministry's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Andrew Simpson, Chief Nursing Officer, Margaret Broadcorn, and Patricia Sullivan of the advocacy group Mesh Down Under.